And I just remember sitting down and crying so hard. And I said, God, if you're real, if you are real, you have to prove yourself to me. You can forgive me. And you know what I've done. You know who I am. You know what's in my heart. If you are real, you have to show yourself to me.
Birds fall short, but I am sure they'll never be anyone like you. You're strong like your father, even when you were scared. When I was in trouble, you never left me there. And you love like your mother, like there's nothing to lose. You're an unsung hero, so I sing this song for you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Taking the Land Unsung Heroes podcast.
Are you in need of a passport in a hurry? Look no further. Global Passport Express is here to help. With our efficient and reliable services, we can process your passport in as quick as 7 days. That's right, just 7 days. And that's not all. We specialize in visas for many countries, including popular destinations like China, India, and so much more. Whether you're planning a family vacation, a business trip, or your next mission trip, Global Passport Express is your one-stop solution for all your passport and visa needs. So why wait? Reach out to us today at 210-375-7525 to speak with one of our friendly and knowledgeable representatives. They will guide you through the process and answer any questions you may have. You can also visit our website at www.globalpassportexpress.com for more information and to start your application online. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Mention this ad and receive 10% off any of our services. Don't let time constraints hold you back from your travel dreams. Trust Global Passport Express to deliver your passport fast, hassle-free, and with a smile. Global Passport Express, your passport and visa experts. Get ready to explore the world.
I am your host today, Ryan Half. My husband and I pastor in Cincinnati, Ohio. Today is my first time doing an Unsung Hero interview, so I want to thank first off Pastor Adam Dragoon and Pastor Dave Smale for trusting me with this and allowing me to do this interview. It's very humbling that I'm able to be a part of this ministry. I think the whole podcast, the whole world evangelism thrust behind it is a really, really cool thing to be a part of. So I'm very thankful for that. So today I'm really excited to announce that we are going to be interviewing one of my very closest friends, Ms. Daphne Dillard. So Daphne, welcome to the podcast. Say hello. And she brought a special guest with her today, Pastor Stacy Dillard, who some of you know has been on this podcast. You've heard his testimony. So I'm very thankful to have both of you here. Say hello, guys.
Hello, everybody. Hello. God bless you.
So I've known the Dillards for over 20 years now. They've been just great friends to me and my family. They've been a blessing to us, and I'm very thankful to have them as a part of our life, a part of my kids' life. That's Unkie Stacy and Aunt Daphne to my kids. So I'm thankful they're a part of our life, and I'm looking forward to this interview today. So Daphne, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're pastoring right now? And
well, we're in Chula Vista, California. We've been here actually this week 14 years. Before that, Stacy was evangelizing out of the Chandler, Arizona church, Pastor Campbell, Joe Campbell. And before that, we were in Malaysia. And before that, he had evangelized for the first time out of Chandler. And then before that, we were in South Africa. And I think I have my timelines.
We'll get into it.
We're out of Chandler, out from under Pastor Campbell, and we've pastored a church in Virginia Beach. We've pastored a church in Soweto, South Africa, Petaling Jaya, Malaysia, and now here in Chula Vista, like I said, for 14 years now. Doesn't seem that long, but this week it was 14 years.
So we have a lot of interesting stories we're going to cover tonight then, huh? But before, I won't keep you the whole time, Stacy, obviously, but I did want you to be on here just for a few minutes, if you would speak to the audience on just your perspective on how your wife has been an unsung hero to you in your ministry. As we were talking earlier, all pastors' wives pay a price in the ministry. Your wife has been a pastor's wife, an evangelist's wife, a missionary's wife. So she's run the whole train of everything, and there has to have been a lot of sacrifice in her life for you to be able to do what you do. And if you could just spend a minute or two how yeah. that has affected you and blessed your life.
Amen. So thank you. Hello, everybody. I was actually thinking about what I was going to say, and I'm actually privileged to brag on my wife for a little bit. She didn't tell me to do this, for all those who think she did. She didn't tell me to do this, but I was sitting here thinking about all the way back to Virginia Beach when we were pioneering. A lot of things about pioneering caught me off guard. But what I will say, from the onset of us pioneering in Virginia Beach, it was very hard, very shocking for me. But I'm so appreciative that I had a wife that understood about word evangelism, understood about personal evangelism, understood about personal prayer. And even though in times in my life when I was slipping, you know, in my mentally kind of losing it in a lot of ways, she always stayed steadfast in her prayer life and her devotional life ever since I've known her. And that even was amplified, that discipline in her life back in 1993, 94, 95, pastoring in Virginia Beach. And then when you fast forward to me, when I felt the call to evangelize, once again, I didn't know all that was going to entail. We, you know, had two small kids. I think right after I started evangelizing, the day or two after my daughter Mikkel was born, I went overseas to Australia for God knows how long. It was too long. Let me just put it that way. But Daphne still continued with her same disciplines of prayer, being on time to church. One thing that she never was late to church. And anyone in China can tell you that even with two small children, the whole time I was evangelizing, her and Barb Reefer were some of the first people to the prayer meeting every single time. And so fast forward as well, when I felt the call to go to South Africa, that was probably one of the most difficult moves we've ever had, because we hadn't had a whole lot of moves. But South Africa was very, very difficult move for us, leaving family and leaving, you know, her mom and dad, my parents, and loads of nieces and nephews. But once again, we found ourselves, you know, in a place where it was hard, but Daphne always was steadfast. And I remember coming home one day, and I pulled into our driveway in South Africa, and I looked through the window. I stayed there for a little while, and I looked through the window, and I could see her in the kitchen cutting some vegetables or doing something in the kitchen, but the whole time she's crying. And I don't know if she saw me, but I saw her. And I said, man, I don't even know if I want to go in there right now, man. I don't really have a whole lot of words that I can say that's going to be comforting. And we had a discussion about it later, but I know the one thing that kept her from losing her mind was prayer, the discipline of prayer, and knowing who you are in God and what he has and for you and what he's called for you to do. So then shortly after that, we came back and then very quickly went to Malaysia. And that was a tough assignment as well, you know, just dealing with the church that had split. There was a lot of rebellion that was happening in the church. But once again, my wife was very steadfast, bold when she needed to be bold, and very temperate when she needed to be temperate. And that has been one of the main character traits that she's had throughout the 34 years that we've been married, that she's one thing I can always count on. I can always count. I may not be able to count on her cooking every night, but If you know, you know. I may not get a hot cooked meal every night, and that's fine. I told her, I said, listen, you may not cook every night. And I say this with all sincerity. I said, you have so many winning qualities about you that offsets all of that other stuff. And you know, I would take her being a prayer warrior and a woman of God over eating, you know, 3-course meal.
Yeah. Every night. Amen.
So I have a good wife. She is a hero to me. She's a good woman to me because she's been steadfast in the things of God. And I saw that from the time that we first started dating. And I remember saying to myself, I need a woman like that. And God gave me a woman like that. And here we are all later. And so I'm looking forward to another 40 years of ministry. If Jesus tarries, we will do it till the wheels fall off. And so I'm privileged tonight to be able to come on and, cause I don't even know if I ever told Dappy any of this stuff before, but
thank you.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever told her that before, but I'm privileged to let whoever watches this to know that I do have a hero over here in Chula Vista. And it makes me, being a pastor and trying to be a man of God and trying to walk a straight line, it makes my life a lot easier. So thank you for having me on tonight.
Thank you for that. Making marriages stronger. See, unsung hero. Yeah, yes. I can testify, though, just to confirm, Daphne, you are a blessing in your prayer life, because I know anytime I need, and you know, we've gone through some things. I can text you and say, I need you to pray. And I know you are praying. And I know you care for me and my family. And that's worth more than anything that you can physically bring to the table, being a prayer warrior and knowing you can trust somebody with your just brokenness and know that they're going to take that before the throne of God. That's a blessing. And that makes you a very exceptional friend. And I appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Stacy, for
thank you.
Kind words.
Okay. See you guys.
Bye. Thank you. So if you want to share a little bit, Daphne, on just how you grew up, what your family life was like, your home life, you know, just your childhood, just kind of how you got started in life.
I come from a big family. There was 8 in the household, my parents. I have a brother and 4 sisters. And my dad was a military man. He was in the Air Force. When I was born, he was in the Air Force. He had been in the Army before that. And we traveled all over the world, through the United States. We lived in England. My younger sister was born there. And, you know, we did a lot of things together as a family. I can't really say I had a really bad childhood, but it wasn't the optimal childhood, because eventually my parents did get divorced. There was a lot of drinking, a lot of violence, a lot of anger in my family. There was a lot of tension between my parents, which caused the divorce. And my brother, who's the oldest, he went into the Air Force. And my 2 older sisters, they're twins. One went into the Air Force, one went into the Army. And I originally had wanted to join the Air Force, and I couldn't get in. I was underweight. I couldn't gain 20 pounds. And I didn't really have a plan B. So it devastated me. And I fell into the pattern of what I had always known through my family. I started drinking. Mm-hmm. I started partying. I didn't do drugs. I wasn't into drugs. And so I just kind of started in that cycle that my parents had, you know, partying and drinking. And actually, alcoholism is a curse in our family. And that just opened the door to me drinking and, you know, underage partying. Up until that time, I was a pretty sheltered person. Being in the military, I was kept from a lot of stuff. I know my sisters and my brother, they partied, and, you know, my brother got into fights and different things, but I had pretty much been kind of sheltered from a lot of stuff. But once I started partying, man, it was like the door swung wide open, you know, to fornication, I got beat up twice, once in high school and once at a gas station by the same girl. And I mean, it was somebody I used to party with in high school. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, though, there was a lot of, my mom was very verbally abusive. My dad was gone a lot because he was a fireman. He worked 24 hours on, 24 hours on, off. So there was a lot of anger, a lot of bitterness, a lot of violence in my family. And you know, the weird thing was, I thought that's how everybody lived.
Like it was normal. Like that was normal to you.
It was. The one thing though, you know, my dad would always say, "Hey, you know, Daddy loves you." And my dad was very affectionate. My mom, I didn't really understand it at the time, but my mom had these ways about her that she just was not as affectionate. She was very angry. She had a lot of issues. And like I said, I didn't understand it at the time. And, you know, by the grace of God, as I've gotten older and my mom's gotten saved, I've come to understand why she was the way she was. But at the time, you know, you're just a small kid. You don't understand things.
Right.
I remember my mom saying to me, you know, "You're ugly and you're hateful and no one is ever going to love you."
Wow.
And so growing up, you know, you think, oh, you know, your parents care for you and they won't lie to you. And so my mom telling me this as I was growing up, it kind of seeded in my heart. And, you know, we have to be really careful what we say to our children.
Right. Spoke that rejection right into you.
And, I mean, I'm telling you, Ryan, I was bitter. I was angry. I was hateful. And, you know, we all crave somebody to love us.
Right.
But my actions were making it so that people wouldn't love me.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, if I got rejected by them, it was like, well, I didn't like them anyway. You know?
Right.
A
shield you put up to protect yourself from being hurt. Right, right.
Over before they screw me over.
Right.
And I remember I would have friends, and I'd even have boyfriends, but it was like in short increments because people could only take me for so long. I suffered with depression. I suffered with rejection. I suffered from, just a whole bunch of stuff.
Right, and right.
I remember if I thought that you were my friend and you were prettier than I was, I would always try to like make you feel less than, like say something like, "Oh, does it bother you that your nose is a little crooked?" You know, mm-hmm. and just kind of make people feel like I felt.
Right.
And, you know, I thought, you know, my mom was right. You know, my mom knows me pretty well because I really am a hateful person. But I didn't realize that was just seeds that were planted, not by my own doing, and they were manifesting.
And that was probably a curse she was operating under from her childhood. And then her, you know, the generational thing, and it just kept going. As a child or a teenager, did you have any hopes or dreams, or did you even know anything about like Christianity or Jesus? Like,
no, we've gone to the Catholic Church, and that's what we were brought up in. And I grew up, you know, lighting candles. You
right.
know, there's like, "Oh God, if you get me out of this, I promise I won't do it again. Just don't let me get caught."
Right, right.
That was the extent of my prayer life then. And one of my sisters, one of the twins, she was in the Air Force. She actually got saved at Pastor Warner's church in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And she was new converts with Marty and Barb Carnegie. And they were all new converts together, you know, going to Bible study. And my sister came home from the Air Force one time, and she goes, "Hey, I just want to tell you guys, you know, I started going to church." And we kind of blew her off because she was practicing with the Jehovah's Witnesses. She had gone to different various things trying to find God. And so we thought, "Well, this is just it's a fad."
Like
it's
a phase or something.
Yeah, it's just a phase. Well, her marriage, she was married at the time. She had two kids, and her marriage ended up breaking up, and she moved back to Chandler and found out that there was a door in Chandler, and she started going. Well, I had already gotten kicked out of the house by then, and I was living on my own, and my two younger sisters ended up going to church, and they got saved, and they would invite me to come to church, and I'd say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, I'll go," and I never would. They'd invite me to come see their dramas, and I'd say, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And the whole time I'm getting ready to go out, and I'm like, "Oh, yeah, it's too late, 7 o'clock. I'm not going to make it." I mean, I had plenty of time to go, but I was like, "Nah, I don't want to go." And I remember going over there a few times, and my sisters were laughing together. They were having a good time. And I remember it really bothered me because we had always argued. me and my sisters, we had always argued. I mean, we did get along, but most of the time, sisters, we didn't.
Right.
And I remember I'd go there and it would irritate me to no end that they were laughing and talking and getting along. So I'd go over there and try to start a fight and then leave. And I remember they would be talking about heaven and they'd talk about Jesus and just stuff that would happen at church, you know, and they would always be trying to talk about something really edifying and something encouraging. In my mind, I was like, you know, that's good for you guys. And I'm glad that's happened for you guys because you guys really deserve it. But because I'm ugly and hateful and unlovable, that's not for me. I can't even begin to think that I could be a part of something like that.
And so growing up, was your mom that same way with your sisters? Or did you feel like you were kind of like the target of your mom?
You know, I think my mom was like that with all of us because as we've gotten older, I hear my sisters talk about things that my mom did or said to them. But at the time, I felt it was just directed at me.
Right, right.
But, I mean, I know my mom had my baby sister, for instance, my mom, that was an unplanned pregnancy. And my mom did not want to be pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so that was not a very good time for her. And she never really... my younger sister never really felt like my mom had ever bonded with her or really felt like, you know how you have a baby and we're like, oh my gosh, this is my
right.
baby. You know, it never really seemed like my mom felt that way towards my younger sister. But at the time, it felt like it was all centered at me because I never heard my mom say these things to my older sisters or my younger sisters. And so, you know, as a young child, if that's all you're told and you don't see it directed anywhere else, well, then, of course, it's you.
You feel like you're the target.
And so I would think when my sister would say, hey, you should come to church with us. I think you'd really like it. I would think, you know what? I can't go to a church where there's people that are good people. I can't go somewhere where there's genuinely nice people because I'll ruin it. And so for a long time, I did not go. I ended up going because my younger sister, who's 2 years younger than me, was getting married. And first time I heard people speaking in tongues, freaked me out. I'm Catholic. I'm going to die Catholic. I'll always
right,
be Catholic.
Right.
And so I go to this wedding and I mean, they've got little metal chairs, you know, they've got dirty carpet, you know, it's just this really rinky dink little building. And they start speaking in tongues. And I remember I started cussing. My mom looks at me and she goes, you need to be quiet. And I just got even more mad. And I just kept cussing. And my mom said, listen, if you don't shut up, I'm going to smack you. Well, I knew enough that my mom would smack me. It didn't matter where it was. And so I stopped. And I remember just thinking, these people are almost too nice. It's weird in here. But these people are almost too nice.
Like, what's the catch? Why? Because you hadn't had like people just genuinely like you for you.
Mm-mm. No, they didn't even know me. They just knew I was their sister, my sister's sister. And I remember distinctly to this day, I was mad and I'm sitting there with my arms folded and I've just like got this sourpuss look on my face. Like, don't anybody try to come talk to me.
Right.
I'm looking down and I heard my sister say, oh, I want to introduce you to my sister, Daphne. And I'm looking down and all of a sudden I see these two black legs and I look and I'm going up and they're like long legs. And I go all the way up and I look in this face and this lady goes, hi, I'm Sunny. And I'm thinking, I am not going to argue with this tall black lady. So I put my hand out and I said, hi, I'm Daphne. And she said, oh, Daphne, hi, nice to meet you. I didn't know then how pivotal this woman was going to be in my salvation. And I toned it down. I got myself together and got through the wedding and I was gone. I was gone. I'm like, you know what? That's weird.
And this was at the door in Chandler. That was kind of like your first experience there.
It was my first experience in a Pentecostal church.
So before that, had you ever had any type of like spiritual or supernatural type of situation before you became a Christian that kind of got you thinking like, oh, there's a whole spiritual, like, you know, just any time where maybe you knew like, yeah, God just like helped me out of that one?
You know, not until my sister started witnessing to me.
Pastors, disciples, ministry leaders, how many visitors have you lost track of in the last year? Don't you wish there was a better way to stay in contact with people who have visited your church? Like it or not, text messages are the way people communicate today. Some stats to consider: 90% of people prefer text messages over calls. 90% of texts are read within 3 minutes. 45% of text messages get a response. We want to share a solution that our church has started using with great success. It's called Text in Church. Born out of a church plant, the Text in Church creators know what it's like to struggle to get the word out and make meaningful connections with members and guests. More than 35,000 church leaders use this platform weekly to boost attendance and deepen relationships. This is a great solution to help people connect with their churches in a simple, meaningful way. When you use the link in the show notes to create an account, you'll get an instant $100 credit toward all future services. Why not give it a try? Start a free trial using our exclusive referral link below. Text in Church is the number one texting software for churches to make your community feel known, noticed, and loved.
I would go to church with friends, to the Catholic church, but honestly, most of the time I was hungover. Don't remember what was going on. I just was like, okay, I'm here because they want me to be here, but I'm sick. I don't feel good. And I just remember when they said, peace be with you and also with you, I knew from growing up we were going to be out of there.
Right, right.
But once my sister started witnessing to me, and I believe it was linked to them praying for me, for God to draw me, then I started noticing things that were kind of like, wow, that's weird. That's weird. But up until that point, I hadn't really been, like I said, a spiritual person. My extent of being spiritual was like, yeah, I'll go to church with you. We went to Catholic church with friends, went to Catholic weddings, went to baptisms, and that was it. But I had no regard for spiritual things. I just didn't put much thought to it.
So what is your salvation story then? How did you actually get to the place where you were able to accept Jesus and allow him to come into your life and begin to heal those areas of just the rejection and the hurt and the anger?
Well, it all started when my sisters got saved, and I would go to the house and I would kind of like throw little arguments out there, and then I'd leave, but they would be quoting scripture. They'd be talking about the Bible. They'd be talking about heaven, walking into heaven. They'd be talking about what heaven was like. And I would go home and I would think, gosh, I wonder where that is in the Bible. And so that was a little seed. Well, through all this, they would invite me to church and I would never go. And I remember I was working a job and I had lost my job. And I lived on the third floor apartment. And I told my sister that, I said, yeah, I got to find another job or I got to get out of my apartment. I just signed a new lease, the whole shebang. And my sister said, well, I'll tell you what. If you can't find another job and you need to get out of your apartment, we will help you. We'll get guys from the church to come get your stuff out of the third floor apartment. Well, I may have been bitter and hateful, but I wasn't stupid. I knew that if I needed somebody to help me, I was going to have to do a little something. So I told my sisters, I said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, I'll go to church with you guys. They said, oh, if you come to church with us and we get some guys to help you, will you come? And I said, yeah. So I thought, okay, I gotta find a way to weasel out of this, but I may have to keep my word. So my sisters brought some friends, and there was a couple of ladies that I had met before my sister got married. And my sister would bring them to my apartment when she would drop by to visit. And so they would talk, we would talk, they knew where I lived. And so they brought the guys, and a couple of the ladies came over to help me pack and take my stuff down. So I was committed. So I don't really remember where I went after I lost that apartment, but I remember going to my sister's house because that was the day that I told him I will go to church. And I thought, okay, I'm going to be smarter than them. And I'm going to act like, oh yeah, I'm coming by. What time is church? And then just say, oh dang, I don't have any clothes to wear. I don't have nothing. And so I showed up at the house and I said, hey, what time is church? And they said, oh, church is at 11. And I said, oh, okay. And I went,
oh, dang, all my stuff's packed up. I don't have anything to wear. And my sister said, hold on, I'll be right back. She goes to the back room, comes back, and had a dress. She said, made you a dress.
Ready.
I'm like, okay. And I said, well, I don't know if I'm going to have time to go back and take a shower. I said, I have nothing. It's all packed up. And my sister said, hold on, I'll be right back. So she goes back to the room, comes back. She goes, this may be TMI, but she goes, you know what? I bought this pack of underwear. They're the wrong size.
She was ready.
I said, okay. So she goes, hey, you can take a shower here. It's not a big deal. So that was where I had grown up. So I thought, okay, yeah. I was committed. And I just like, okay, I'll go. And I remember walking into the church. Now, I had a college friend who went to the Globe Church. And she had backslid, gotten pregnant. We had met in college. We started partying. And the whole time we were partying, she's witnessing to us. You know, Jesus is Catholicism. You know, Jesus is the only way. We'd mock her. We'd make fun of her. We'd listen to her, but out of respect. And so I had befriended this friend. And she had gone back to church after she got pregnant. And she was inviting me to church. And I told her, I ain't going. I'll be honest with you. I am not going. So between her and my sisters, I had somebody praying for me. So back to my sisters, we go to the church. And honestly, when I walked in, I was really mad that I had let myself go to church. Mm-hmm. I was like, dang, how did I let this happen? Normally, I'm the type of person that if I don't want to do something, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
And I'm thinking, how the heck did I let this happen? So I sit down, people are coming in, greeting me. And honestly, Ryan, I felt like, how can I be in here with these people? They are so nice. They I don't know them, and yet they're coming and introducing themselves to me. And I don't belong here. I don't belong here. So worship starts, music starts, everybody sits down, and Pastor Campbell starts preaching. And I remember looking over at my sister and I said, who told this guy about me? And she's like, shh, no, he's not taught. He doesn't even know you. And I said, no, somebody told him about me. I said, this is ridiculous. And she's saying, Daphne, just please stop. He's not talking about you. Seriously, he's not. And so I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm ticked. And I was fuming. I was so mad. I was shaking. And he's preaching about, you know, you look like you have it all together. You want people to think you have it all together. But at night, you go home and you cry.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, Ryan, I remember one day distinctly, like I said, I lived on the third floor. I was home by myself. I was drinking and I was sitting down and I didn't have a TV on. Oh, I didn't have a TV because my TV had blown up. So it was just quiet in my apartment. And I heard the people downstairs in the second floor, they were having a dinner party and they were laughing and talking and you could tell playing music. They were having a great time. And I just remember sitting down and crying so hard. And I said, God, if you're real, if you are real, you have to prove yourself to me. If you can forgive me and you know what I've done, you know who I am. You know what's in my heart. If you are real, you have to show yourself to me. Then I lost my job. That's before I lost my job. And I didn't realize that God heard that prayer. And where my life was going downhill, God was ready to just bring me back up. And while Pastor Campbell's preaching, I'm thinking, I didn't tell anybody about that time. I didn't tell anybody about me crying in my apartment. I did not. Somebody told him. And I remember the sermon was over, and he said, every head bowed and every eye closed. And I remember I leaned my head down and I thought, I'm going to run out of here as soon as I can. I want to get away from these people. I felt so unclean, so dirty. You know, that feeling of you're not working. And he said, if you want to accept Christ, if you want to be forgiven, raise your hand.
And God is my witness, I don't even remember raising my hand. But Pastor Campbell said, that young mother, I see your hand. And I'm thinking, oh, he didn't see me. He didn't see my hand. But really, Pastor thought I was a young mother.
Right.
And so afterwards, I'm sitting down and he says, you know, if you raise your hand, look at me. And I wouldn't look up. And then somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, you raised your hand? And I'm like, I think so. And they said, okay. The lady took me up to go pray. And I was fighting it to the very end. I remember we sat at the altar and she said, okay, just repeat after me. And I said, okay. She said, Lord Jesus. And I said, Lord Jesus. She said, forgive me, a sinner. And I said, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not a sinner. I am not a sinner. No, I am not saying that. So my sister comes up behind me and she's got her hand on my back. She goes, Daphne, just say the prayer. And I go, no. I am not. I mean, I'm mad at the altar. And I'm like, no, you guys don't understand. I am not a sinner. I have not killed anybody. I don't steal anything. And so my sister's begging with me, just say the prayer. And so I got tired of fighting. I got tired of arguing. I just said, okay, what was the prayer again? And I mean, I was just so nasty with this lady. And she goes, okay, let's start from the beginning. So we started from the beginning. And God is my witness. As soon as I said, forgive me for being a sinner, I felt the weight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I looked at my sister and I said, who did that? And my sister's looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, who took that what was on me off? And my sister said, God did. And yep. I remember just weeping, not realizing how heavy the weight of my sin was.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. How old were you at this time? What year was that?
That I was 23. That was in, I just turned 23, and that was in 1980.
And so this was in the Chandler Church. How big was the Chandler Church at the time?
I think maybe it was about 120 people. Yeah. It was about 120 people and not very big, well, compared to what it is now.
Right. So you've seen the church just massively explode over the years and the growth. Yeah, that's cool. So what happened then? Did you just immediately, I'm going to just go for this full force, or did it still take some time for you to?
No, I was dating a guy at the time and he would come to church with me and he'd want to argue with people. So I just was like, look, this ain't going to work. And I broke up with him. And then I remember the day I got baptized. I got saved in July of 1986. I got baptized in August of 1986. And, you know, I just see, like, I can close my eyes and look back and see how the devil plotted at every point to just take me out.
Yeah.
I got baptized and I went to my dad's house to get dressed. And the phone rings and I pick it up and it was a guy on the other end of the phone. He goes, can I talk to Daphne? I said, well, this is her. And he goes, well, look out your window. I said,
that's creepy.
Yeah. He said, look out your window. So I look out the window and it's an old boyfriend of mine across the street. And I'm like, oh, hold on. I'll go out there. So I hang up. I go out there. Long story short, I ended up backsliding with him.
Mm-hmm.
I was only saved a couple of months. And I ended up backsliding with him. And, you know, as a new convert, you're just kind of like, you know, maybe I can do this. You know, maybe this will work. And I just could tell, you know what, it was either going to be God or it was going to be this relationship. And at the time, I could, you know, as a new convert, you go by what you can see. And I thought, okay, this relationship is I'm going to see where this relationship goes. And I'm not going to come back to church. But the funny thing was, I said, God, I'm going to ask you to forgive me for what I'm going to do. So I go to the altar, having a revival, and Kim Cast, another very pivotal person.
Faithful woman in the church. Yeah.
She came and prayed with me. And she didn't really ask. She just prayed a sinner's prayer with me. And I got up to go out. And it was a pastor, a guest speaker. And he goes, Miss, before you go, God has a word for you. And I'm like, okay. I'm a new convert.
Did you know what that was? Like, what a word, or had you like anything like that, or was that totally like foreign to you?
It was foreign to me. I'd seen it before a couple of times, but I didn't really know how it worked. Mm-hmm. But he told me, don't leave. And so I stood there and he read my mail.
Right.
My mail. And he said, you know, if you will let go of this relationship, God is going to send you somebody that will love you like nobody has ever loved you before. And I was kind of confused. I was kind of mad, but I was confused because I didn't really understand it. So I had to make a decision. I knew then that I couldn't continue with that relationship if God was going to help me. And I remember going to Pastor Campbell and I was mad. I was like, Pastor Campbell, why did that guy say that in front of the whole church? I mean, in my mind, I'm like, can't you just take somebody aside and tell them that? And I said, you know, I know people that are, you know, have boyfriends. I know some of these girls have boyfriends. And Pastor Campbell said, well, probably because you're the only one that can handle it. And I thought, well, okay, you know, it is what it is. And I went home. And I sat down and I talked to myself. I said, Daphne, you got to make up you got to make up your mind. And I said, you know what? If God has promised me something, I probably should try it. And I told this man, I said, you know what? I'm not seeing you anymore. I went to my job and I said, look, this guy calls me. I got fired. I quit. I worked somewhere else. Whatever you want to tell him, just I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. So my coworkers were thankfully really good about it. It was tough. It was tough because I had dated him before I got saved, years before I got saved, and then backslid with him after I got saved. And so it was a process, but God brought me through it. And it was, you know what, if somebody had told me a year before I got saved that my life would be completely different a year from now, I would have never believed it.
Right. Right. Because you get so used to living in that heaviness and the darkness and the rejection and the anger and the anxiety and fear. It's like you can't imagine life any other way. But yeah, I remember when I got saved as well, just feeling that heaviness lift. And I know that doesn't happen for everybody, but it was literally like I physically felt it. So I know exactly what you're talking about with that. That's cool. So when you got to the church then, was your future husband already there or did he come in? How did the two of you get together? Let's hear the love story.
Well, you want his side, my side, or the side that everybody tells? No, he came in after I was there. I got saved in 86. He got saved November of 88. And I remember the day they walked in because him and his roommate, they were tall. Obviously, they weren't part of the church. They were visitors. And Gene Proctor, a brother in the church, had invited them out. He met him at a car wash. I don't remember when I went up and introduced myself, but, you know, I would go up and introduce myself to all kinds of people. And he came in, got saved that night. A boxer named Ernie Shavers was preaching, and he answered that altar call. And they were coming. And we started talking as friends because I was talking to another young man in the church. And so we would talk and he would tell me, oh, you know, I've got a girlfriend. You know, actually, before I found out he had a girlfriend, I was going to try to set him up with a girl in the church, which I should have known better. But I thought, you know, this guy and this girl may have some things in common. And so, you know, I tried to set him up and it didn't work. Which I was honestly, I was kind of disappointed about. I was like, dang, I thought I made a connection there and it didn't work. So then I find out he's got a girlfriend and I thought, okay, I'm not going to mess with that. So as we became friends, he would talk to me and tell me, hey, you know, I have a girlfriend, you know, I love her. We've been dating for a while and I'd like for her to get saved. Would you pray for her? And I said, absolutely. And so through the months, he told me, oh, by the way, she's coming to visit me. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking, where is she going to stay? You know, this guy got saved. But, you know, I didn't have a relationship enough to tell him, hey, it's probably not good that she stays with you at your house.
Right.
But I'm sure he'll tell some of the brothers and they'll address that. And so one day she comes and she's in church. And I remember he was on one side of the church. I was on the other. And I looked back and I saw him. And I saw this pretty girl that was standing next to him. And I'm like, oh, I bet you that's his girlfriend. So we start worshiping. We start worshiping in tongues. And she hightails it out of there.
Freaked her out, huh?
Oh, she was yelling. I couldn't really make out what she was yelling because we were praying. But I saw him go out after her. And in my mind, I'm looking back and I see them both walk out. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, there he goes. We ain't gonna see him again. And I don't remember what, I didn't look back to see if he came back into the church, but I remember thinking, that's the last we've seen with Stacy. Next service, he's there. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's pretty powerful if he came back. And so I asked him, hey, what happened? And he said, she hated it. She said we were freaks, that this place was weird, that I was a freak. She liked me better when I was drinking, the way I was before. And I said, oh, man, I've been told that by some friends, and I know how that hurt. And I said, well, listen, I'm still going to keep praying for her, and I'm going to believe God. And you know, the thing that really impressed me about Stacy was I could tell he really loved her. And the way that he talked about her and the way that his face lit up, and it was like, man, that is, in my heart, I thought, you know what? It would be so awesome if a man spoke about me like that.
So at that time, you had no, like, in your mind, like, oh, this guy might be a nice guy if things don't work out with him and his girlfriend.
No, because I was talking to another guy. And so I was thinking, oh, that was going to lead to something. Mm-hmm. And I did not want a younger guy. I did not want to marry anybody who was not Mexican. I didn't want to marry anybody who wasn't saved as long as I was. I wanted a man who was Hispanic, older, and had a house.
So you marry a younger black man who's been saved younger or less than you. Because God had a plan and it was different than yours, right? In that 2 years before Stacy came in, had you like completely locked in? Like, were you like, was your relationship with God just locked on going, like moving forward full force? Or were you still having struggles with like your old life as far as with the drinking and, you know, things like that? Or were you just like saved? I'm going for it.
You know what? It took me a while to get rid of that old boyfriend that contacted me after I got baptized, but the drinking, God delivered me from alcoholism immediately. And so that was something that I was really holding on to. For the most part, I think I was locked in. I had ministry. I was in drama. I was in nursery. I would help Pastor Campbell in the office filing, typing. So I had pretty much been established.
Right.
I wasn't one of those people that were wondering if they were going to come back the next service. You know, right. I was at every service. I had a good job. I learned how to give during that time. Learned about missions, missionaries, giving, being faithful. I was following up on some of the young girls that were coming in after me. So I was pretty well grounded by that time.
So let's jump forward then. How did things shift then with you and Stacy, to where did he begin to lock in? Did he know he had a call to preach on his life, or were you guys already together at that time? Like, how did that all come together?
It took him a while, kind of like me. It took him a while to get on, but
Is your church in need of a brand new flyer design? You're in the right place. We're here to help. My name is Eric Pizarro with Advanced Creative Design. We are offering all listeners of this podcast a 10% discount off their very first order. Feel free to send us an email at advancedcreativedesign23@gmail.com. Also, make sure you mention in that email that you heard us here on this podcast. Our website will be up soon, but in the meantime, we will be glad to help. God bless you all. We look forward to working with you. Make it a great day.
Eventually he did. He started a rap group with Tim, AJ, and Steve. They were a rap group for a while. So he started having ministry. He started going on. When he got it, he got it. And it was kind of neat to see how he progressed, because I saw him from the day he walked in to the day I found out he liked me. I saw a progression in his life. And it was an upward progression, and it was a committed one. He used to fast. I mean, he witnessed to everything that moved. Stacy has this way about him that people are drawn to him, and he used that to minister to people. And I just remember thinking, man, that guy, he's got a gift. You know, there's something about him. It was, I really thought it was neat how people were drawn to him and he would witness to them. And I just saw how he was kind to people. He had a good memory. Somebody would walk in and say, hey, did you cut your hair? And he would say, yeah, thanks for noticing. And I'm like, dang, I've known him forever. I didn't notice that. Mm-hmm. And so I saw God really build him up, and he grew spiritually. So by the time he put it out there that he liked me, he was on the street preaching. He was in a rap group.
Were you already separated from the boyfriend that you had when he came in?
He backslid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was long gone. It's so funny because he told me, Daphne, I'd see you talking to him outside by the doors, and he'd say, what is that? What is she doing with that clown?
He could see it as a man, huh?
He could. And, you know, I remember he'd be walking by and he'd say, hi, Daphne. I'd say, hey, Stacy. And he wouldn't say hi to the guy. And I'm like, oh.
You never picked up on that?
No, I never did. I never did. And so, I mean, even when people would say, hey, what do you think of Stacy? And I'm like, yeah, Stacy's all right.
Right.
You know, Stacy likes you. Yeah, I like Stacy too. He's a nice guy.
He didn't meet your list you had of being Hispanic and older.
No. And you know what? I had been talking to another guy in another church, and it's so funny. I would tell Sonny, because I was living with Sonny Wilkins at the time. Her and her husband, and I would tell her, you know what? I'm so done with guys, man. I'm just going to go for God. I'm not even. And Sonny would say, maybe there's somebody in the church for you right now. And I said, Sonny, no, there's nobody. I don't even want to talk about it. And she would just chuckle. I don't know if she knew or not, but Stacy would put like little feelers out there. Hey, what do you think about Stacy? I'm like, Stacy? I mean, he's Stacy. But my mind, I saw his girlfriend. She was a pretty blonde. I didn't put two and two together. I didn't. And I wasn't looking for a boyfriend. I was looking at God and live for God.
So when did the big moment happen?
When did the big moment happen? Oh, he asked me if I would go out with him after a Saturday night concert.
Was it shocking to you? Or was it just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to go hang out as friends?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. He asked, you know, back then all the singles would get together.
Just hang out together.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there was a brother in the church that he was going to his brother's wedding. So he said, hey, Daphne, can you go with me shopping and help me find a suit? And I'll buy you dinner. I'm like, hey, you buy dinner, I'm there. So shopping, we went out and ate. You know, we'd go do stuff. And so
it sounds like he was finding reasons to hang out with you, but you just weren't picking up on it.
Well, I don't know if that brother was, but Stacy was vacuuming one day and I walked by and he shut the vacuum up and goes, hey, Daphne. He goes, hey, you want to go eat Chinese food sometime? And I said, who's buying? And he goes, I'll buy. And I said, hey. So he said, okay, hey, you want to go? And he said a day. And I said, yeah, we'll go. So the day came and I had to pick him up because I had a truck. He didn't have a truck. So I had to go pick him up, which it wasn't a big deal to me. So he gets in the car or the truck and he's got this bag. And I'm like, that's weird. What's he got this bag for? And so he gets in and he goes, oh, hey, I got something for you. And I said, oh, thanks. And I look at it and it's an outfit, a pair of pants and a shirt.
And I'm like, still buys you your clothes to this day. Wow.
On that fact alone, I kept him. No, I thought that was really kind of neat. So anyway, we go eat Chinese food and we're eating, we're laughing, having a good old conversation. And he goes, man, this is the first date I've been on in a long time. I said,
you didn't know it was a date?
I said, this is a date? And he goes, yeah. And I go, oh, okay.
Oh, no.
I'm thinking, because in my mind, we're friends. We're friends, all friends. You know, I'm not putting anything out there. I'm not putting any feelers out there. I just want to live for God. I just want to serve God. And so I'm just like, okay, all right. You know, and we continue on with the dinner. And so then Dave Eccles is kind of putting a little bit of seed in there, and you know, other people are putting a little seed there, and finally somebody goes, you know, Stacy likes you. Oh, yeah, they go, you know, Stacy likes you. I said, yeah, I like Stacy too. And they go, no, Stacy really likes you. And I go, oh, dang. And in my mind, I'm thinking, what did I do to encourage this? And how do I reconcile this with, I've been praying for this guy to get back with his old girlfriend. And so it was kind of confusing to me. And so then we went out again, and he said, hey, you know, what do you think, you know, about us dating? You know, I talked to Pastor and blah, 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 blah. And I just remember saying, look, I understand that you love this person, and I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to be this bounce back girl. Mm-hmm. If you like her, you like her. If you want to be with her, be with her. But if you want to date me, I'm not going to be allowing you to go back and forth. I'm not going to put up with that. And he said, okay. And that's how we started dating.
And so at that point, did he express to you that he felt a call to preach on his life? Or were you guys just going to just be pillars in the church?
You know what? We didn't really, here's the thing. We didn't really talk about that until after we got married and he felt called. I don't know if I'd have married him if he'd have told me he was called to preach, because I didn't know. All I knew was I was just called to be a Christian. I didn't. You know, a lot of these young girls now say, I'm called to be a pastor, so I'm called to be. I didn't have that.
Right.
I didn't think about that. It's just, okay, I just am called to be a Christian.
How long did you guys date before you got married?
Well, we were dating 2 months, and he kind of asked me to marry him. So we got engaged after about 2-3 months, and then we broke up for 3 months. And then our pastor,
why you guys broke up?
Yeah, because he was talking to his old girlfriend again.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, at the time we broke up, that was really God, because God used that to get him to deal with that issue. And
I cut it off to completely just close that door. Right.
Yeah. And so I can look at that, back at that, and go, no, that was God. That mm-hmm. was God. And so, you know, but I had made up my mind, hey, if we don't get married, I'm good. And actually, people were really shocked that I didn't leave the church, that neither of us were all weepy. It was embarrassing to tell people we're not engaged anymore. That was kind of embarrassing. But, you know, the embarrassment only lasted a little while. And we were both going for God, doing what we needed to do. I didn't waver. He didn't waver. And God really used that time.
And so who made the move to get back together?
He did. Because the pastor that we had tried to pull us out of the fellowship.
Right.
Papa was in Malaysia, and he came back and took the mm-hmm. church over. And Stacy had just, you know, he had said some stuff, made, you know, apologized for things that he had said about people. And, you know, he just said, Daphne, look, I made a mistake. Forgive me. And, you know, do you want to try dating? So we did. And then he said, you know, I don't even remember how we decided to get married. We just knew we were going to go to Pastor Campbell. Because he never officially proposed. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for me to really remember how that came about, other than we talked to Pastor Campbell. Pastor Campbell said, okay, I'm going to give you guys 6 months to date. Here's your wedding date. And then that was that.
So let's fast forward. So you get married, and do you both just enter into ministry in the church, like as a couple now? When did things change where you knew, okay, we're not going to be in Chandler forever? There's a calling on our lives to go and do other things.
Stacy actually didn't feel that for about a year or so after we got married. Shortly after we got married, he took on the responsibility as song leader and then door director, which that was really a hard time, because before we got married, we said, look, before we do anything, before we commit to anything, we're going to travel a little bit. He was working for DHL. And he had flight benefits. So we were going to use that to go visit family and do different things. And he accepted the song leader position and then later the door director position. And I'm telling you, that to me, that really made me mad. It really made me mad. And I didn't handle it well. And I made his life miserable. He was door director for 3 years. And that was the longest door director they've had at that time. And I remember I got really bitter about it. I really got bitter. I was not a very good disciple's wife. I was not a very good disciple. And I caused probably a lot of heartache for Pastor Campbell and Connie, mm-hmm. because I was very angry that Stacy had taken this position. And we had said, no, 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 we're not going to do anything like that until a little bit later. And so I'd had cancer when I was younger, and they told me I wouldn't be able to have kids. And so I don't know how it morphed into, oh, I know how it did. Stacy, we'd have revivals, and pastors would call Stacy out and say, God's going to bless you. God's going to use you. God's going to give you this. God's going to give you that. And I remember thinking, God's going to give you all that. And you went against what we had agreed to. And so now you're getting blessed, and I can't even have a baby. I started praying for a baby, and, you know, I would see young girls that were in church, leave the church, come back pregnant. And, you know, here I was, I, you know, was a good wife. You know, I got married the right way. I didn't go out into the world and find a man and bring him in here. And so I got really, really bitter. And I remember Stacy said, yeah, you know, I really feel like God's calling me to preach. And I said, listen, we're not going anywhere until we have a baby. And so don't even talk to me about preaching anywhere. Don't talk to me about going anywhere. I don't want to hear it until we have a baby. And if we don't have a baby, we aren't going anywhere. And I remember just every time Stacy would get a word, I would literally want to scream at the pastor, be quiet, stop. I was so, I'm telling you, Ryan, I was so filled with anger and, you know, I just think this whole thing was handled wrong. It was all wrong. I wasn't asked what I thought. I was just told what I was going to do, and I was mad. And so I remember everything that Pastor Campbell would ask me to do, I would be like, okay, I know what I'm going to do. This is what you're telling me to do. I'm only going to do this. That's it. Mm-hmm. And don't expect me to do more. And that's what I would do. I wouldn't do any more. I would do what I wanted to do. And I remember one day we're in prayer, and I was just, oh, I was so angry. I was so bitter. I was just like, I remember Pastor Campbell told me to do a shower for a lady, and I didn't want to do it. And right. I was mad. And I'm sitting in the prayer room, Stacy's sitting next to me, and I start hearing him pray for me. Like, God help my wife, bless her. And I remember I just felt like, so, you know, it's sad, but I remember what came to my mind was my mom. You know, you're ugly, you're hateful, and no one's going to love you. And I just remember thinking, man, I thought I was past that.
Right.
That was right. Behind me. And I remember just saying, okay, God, I'm going to try. But I kept trying, and I was still angry. I was still bitter. I was still, you know, just rebellious. And I remember one time they showed that film about, remember the Elliots, the missionaries that went over to that tribe, yeah. and her husband? They showed that video. And I remember just sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, this woman, everything was taken from her. Everything. She had it, and it was taken from her. And look what she's done. How dare you? God's giving you everything except for a child. And look at how you are. And I remember just sitting there, and I remember God spoke to me, if I never give you a child, will you still save me?
Right. Right.
And I just broke down, and I said, you know what, God, I repent. And that night I went and I told Pastor Count, I'm sorry for being a bonehead.
Right.
If we can backtrack a little, do you mind sharing a little bit about that whole time in your life where you did have cancer and how that affected? Because I know you had a struggle with infertility, yeah. how that affected. And going into your marriage, did Stacy know that? And was he okay with that? Or how did that conversation happen?
Well, I had cervical cancer when I was 20 and 21. And they told me because I was underweight, my ovaries were, you know, there was some stuff wrong with my ovaries, and I had cancer, scar tissue, that my chances of having children were very slim to none. And at the time, I mean, I wasn't saved. I was like, hey, what the heck? I can party. I don't have to worry about getting pregnant. I'm fine. This is cool.
Right, right.
Saved. I got saved, and I didn't really think too much about it until Stacy and I started dating, and I sat with him and I said, look, we have to have a conversation because there's something you need to know. Stacy was very, you know what? He said, Daphne, I'm marrying you because I love you, not because I want to go and have all these kids. And so I said, okay, you know, if you're willing to marry a woman who you don't know will ever be able to have kids, then let's get married. So he knew that going in. But like I said, I would see these young girls come in. You know, they were brought up in church. They'd leave and they'd come back. They were pregnant. Everybody's, oh, look at your baby. You know, then they'd go back out, come back in, pregnant again. Oh, look at your baby. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what, God? I didn't go out there. I didn't go out and sleep around to find some guy to get pregnant and then come back to church. I've been in church. I waited to become a mom till I got married. And, you know, I just felt like I wasn't worthy to be a mom. I just felt, you know what? That opened up the door to rejection again.
Rejection, yes.
And I just was like, okay, God, you know what? Fine. I'm going to be how I was before. Or I didn't really say that, but that's where my mind went.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, I did more damage to myself than anybody. Mm-hmm. And it affected my marriage because I was bitter at my husband. You know, I wasn't always very nice to him. And when he would talk about what God had on his heart, I would tell him, you know what? I didn't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. And so I would cut him off. And so it affected me. It affected us that way, where I don't feel like he could have said what he felt God had called him to do because it would trigger me.
Right. So there was a wedge between the two of you.
Yeah.
So do you feel that struggle with the infertility had an impact on how you dealt with other ladies in the church? Because I know I my struggle with infertility as well. I definitely pulled back from, because I didn't feel like I fit in. You know, mm-hmm. I felt like I was on the outside and, you know, I couldn't relate, I guess, to the other women. And sometimes I think unintentionally, you know, they made me feel that way as well. So going to baby showers and throwing baby showers for people, it was difficult because I just felt like I wasn't part of the club.
Yeah.
Did that, especially now you guys were in ministry, you're the door director's wife. Did that affect how you related to other women in the church or how you allowed them to have a relationship with you?
You know, I think it did. And like you said, unknowingly, you put out vibes that way.
Hi, I'm Mike Ashcraft, pastor currently in Van Nuys, California. I was a missionary in Guatemala for almost 16 years. And I thought that the only inheritance I'd leave my kids was the most important one, the spiritual legacy. When God brought me back to the United States, my family had only our clothes and computer. Since then, God has blessed me financially, and not through having a big church. Find out how you can steward your finances to prosperity and bless your children. Show them that serving God has blessings both here on earth and in the future in heaven. Call me today, 310-403-6471. That's 310-403-6471.
Because I remember one of my good friends, Mary, was pregnant and she didn't want to tell me.
Oh,
but
about, yeah.
At that time I had gotten over the, okay, I'm not bitter. And I remember going to her and saying, Mary, I heard you're pregnant. And she goes, oh, Daphne, I didn't want to tell you. And I'm telling you, Ryan, that was like a stab.
Yeah.
Because I thought, here's one of my good friends. She's happy because she's having another baby, but she doesn't want to tell me. So what did I put out there? What vibe did I put out that this woman is apprehensive about telling me about something that's a blessing to her? So I can't say that I saw it, but I know I probably did because of her reaction to her pregnancy.
So was the infertility issue something you and Stacy openly talked about, or did he kind of just deal with it his way, you deal with it your way? And was it kind of just closed doors for both of you? Because I know for years, no. Nick and I didn't talk about it. We just stayed busy with church stuff.
We talked about it, but the way that I talked about it, it was always in a if I don't, you're not going to. Type of, like a, how do you call that? Like a bargaining chip.
Right.
You know, if I don't have a baby, then don't talk about this. Don't say that. Don't mention this. And I mean, we had tried going through the doctor. We took fertility tests and, you know, did all that stuff. We even tried going through adoption and that fell through. But we did talk about it. But towards the adoption phase, we were both talking about it and, hey, okay, we're on the same page. I'm not angry at you. I'm not bitter. We're cool. But it took me a while to get there.
Right, right. Yeah, I think infertility is a very, it's a difficult road. And I think you don't really understand, I don't think, unless you've been on it. But I think as women, we do, there's a part of us that we do close up because it's that fear of being hurt and being, you know, being rejected by other women who have kids, you know? And I think it's a very difficult thing. My heart goes out to women that struggle with infertility, because for me, I struggled 13 years and I had those losses, you know, different things. And I just, my heart does go out for, and the husbands as well, because, you know, they don't know how to help their wives through that. But yet they have a desire too, you know, to have children and be a dad. And yeah, it really takes the hand of God helping those situations.
Yes, yes, it does. And he's faithful.
Let's move forward a little bit. So you guys are now saved, you're married, you're in ministry in the church. How long until you guys took your first step into the ministry out? Was he pioneering, pastoring? Did he take over? Did you guys go overseas, evangelize? What was the first step into this next part of your ministry? And how did you release him to do that? Because you were holding on to this, and we're not going until I have a baby. So how did that change for you?
Well, I saw that video of the
Elizabeth Elliot, right?
Elizabeth Elliot, right. And at that point, I said, okay, you know what? I told Pastor, if we need to go, we'll go. I'm not going to hold him back. I'm not going to hinder him. And I'm not going to use that chip anymore. And so I can't remember how much longer. I knew there was a church in Virginia Beach already, and the pastor had come back, and he was telling my husband, him and his wife were showing him pictures of Virginia and how nice it was. And Stacy said one day he was coming home from work and he said God spoke to him to go to the church to pray. And that's when God called him to go to Virginia. And so he said, you know, I think I want to go to Virginia. And I'm like, dang, that's so far, man. You know, can we just go to Phoenix? But I knew it was leaving my whole family, leaving my friends, leaving the church. I mean, you know, I didn't know how I was going to feel about that. But God slowly started to change my heart about it. And I don't even remember. You know what? That time is really kind of a blur because there was so many things happening in the church. And good things. There was a lot of people getting saved. But then I remember, you know, we talked to Pastor Campbell and he said, okay, you guys want to go to Virginia Beach? We'll send you. And they announced us at the conference. Nobody knew. My family didn't know. And I remember we're at the maybe it's a rally. I don't remember. Rally conference. It was there in Mesa. And they said, you know, going into Virginia Beach, Virginia, out of Chandler, Stacy and Daphne. And all I remember was I just busted out crying and I'm getting up and I look back and my sisters are just, they're bawling. And we're walking up and I'm thinking, okay, you got to suck it up. But I thought, you know what? I'm sad because I'm leaving everybody, but I'm excited because there's another part of my life that's going to happen. And I didn't really understand how God was going to use it, but I just felt like, you know what? We made the decision. We got to do it. We got to do it. And so I don't know about Stacy. I was still kind of like, oh, maybe we won't go, but I was ready to go. I was ready to go.
And that was a takeover, correct?
No, we pioneered.
You pioneered?
Pioneered, yeah.
So why don't you share the fun fact about the Virginia Beach Church that you pioneered and how it has a tie to this podcast?
Well, the pastor who was there already, they ended up leaving. We got one of his, a family of his. And through that, we built the door in Virginia Beach. Well, when we left, there were several other pastors, but the Potter's House there has some of the founding members of the first Virginia Beach Church that came to our church. And some of the people like Tony and Tori Chase, they stayed. And so some of the people from the very first church and ours are in the Virginia Beach Potter's House.
Right. And the Virginia Beach Potter's House is where Pastor Adam Dragoon pastors. And he him and Pastor Dave Smale head up this podcast. So it's kind of neat how we're all family, even though years ago, years and years and years ago, you guys were there. It came, you know, came around, and that's where this podcast has originated from. And it's a privilege to be able to interview both you and have Pastor Stacy pop on as well. So I think for right now, we're going to save the rest of our conversation for our premium subscribers. When we come back, we'll hear just how you guys entered into the ministry and all the exciting places you've been and challenges you've faced in the pastoral and evangelistic and missionary ministry. But right now, we're going to save the rest of the conversation for our premium subscribers. If you would like to subscribe, you can subscribe in the show notes below. Every dollar that is earned through this podcast goes directly towards world evangelism. And so for our regular listeners, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.
You're my unsung hero, and I sing this song for you.